This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Everyone, welcome to the Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 115. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the audio show where we talk about our favorite books in science fiction and fantasy, discuss all the things you guys are talking about over on Goodreads.com, and doing some other stuff.
Yeah, this is the casual show. This is where we have the, you know, we just let our hair down. I don't have any hair, but Veronica lets her hair down.
I usually wear my hair down anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Already down.
Speaking.
But this is good times.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this
join
is.
Join us.
Indeed. And usually we kick off the show with a little segment called What Are We Drinking?
So, see, Tom, good times.
It is early today. We are recording a little bit earlier than usual. It's 4 p.m. currently.
Yeah, it's late and early because we're recording on Tuesdays now. For those who are like, wait a minute, why is this late? We're just going to record on Tuesdays because it fits our schedule better, okay? Hope that's okay. Mm-hmm. But we're recording a little earlier in the day, right?
And but we are drinking anyway because that's how we roll. And
it's 7 o'clock on the East Coast.
That's true. It's 7 o'clock somewhere. Are you drinking beer or wine, or what's your deal?
I'm having a snow day.
Oh, so you didn't work?
No. I'm having a beer called Snow Day. It's a New Belgium winter ale.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Brewed and bottled in Fort Collins, Colorado.
All right.
Thank you, Colorado.
I am drinking a 2008 Eagle Vale Margaret River Shiraz.
Well, are you fancy?
Yes, I am all up. apparently, I've been doing very well on the on this one. This is from Australia. Last time I was drinking a Tasmanian wine, which got Tassie Dave in the forums all excited.
Exactly.
I never put Tasmania and Tassie together. I didn't know that was a thing.
As soon as he got excited, I'm like, oh, of course.
Like, it all makes sense now.
So Shiraz, is that, that's an Australian grape or something,
yes,
right? Because it seems like the Shirazes are all Australian.
It's related to or is the same as Syrah, but I get confused sometimes. I think it's okay. Syrah if it's in
it's
Europe.
What drunk Australians are trying to say when they say Syrah. They're like, Shiraz.
Yes.
That's not it?
Is sure, that not no, right? That's not it at all.
I think that's right.
But anyway, it's quite good. But we should say a quick, before we get into the quick burns, a quick happy birthday to author Michael Stackpole.
Yay, Michael Stackpole. We've interviewed him on Sword and Laser, of course, but also every year when we go to Dragon Con, we always get to hang out a little bit with Michael Stackpole, and it's always a distinct pleasure. He's a great guy.
He is a great guy, and I only know it's his birthday because it popped up on Skype.
Oh, that's funny, because we called him for the
interview. Because we called him for the interview, and now I know when his birthday is.
Well, happy birthday, Mike.
Happy birthday. But let's move on to the quick burns.
The precious. The Tolkiens must protect the precious. Eric Wex had a good article up on Wired back on November 21st about the lawsuit that's going on between not only the Tolkien estate, actually. A lot of people hear Christopher Tolkien is taking on Warner Brothers over rights to the Lord of the Rings franchise. But it's not just Tolkien. It's also HarperCollins on the mm-hmm. Tolkien side because Warner Brothers has been taking their marketing rights to the extreme.
To the extreme.
I mean, really. They're planning theme parks. There's slot machines.
Right. Well, okay. So they have the original marketing rights that included tangible property. But then, right, so as you said,
stuff. Yeah.
It's really going way beyond what could be considered tangible property. I mean, when you're talking about online slot machines, for example, and it's getting a little bit out of hand. And frankly, the Tolkien estate and HarperCollins is concerned that at some point, you know, the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit film franchises are going to basically, you know, they're going to eclipse the book franchise, and they're not going to see any money from that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously people won't stop buying Lord of the Rings books, but all of this licensing that they gave to Warner Brothers really wouldn't benefit them more than a few sales of books in these cases. Because it's not just about making money, though. Christopher Tolkien also says, you know, this isn't what we had in mind in extending the legacy of J.R.R. Tolkien. He has a quote down here at the bottom. That I'm trying to find, that he gave to Le Monde. He doesn't want to see the intellectual tour de force that was his father's work reduced to slot machines and hack and slash online games.
And here's the quote. Denny's meals.
The chasm between the beauty and seriousness of the work and what it has become has gone too far for me. Such commercialization has reduced the aesthetic and philosophical impact of this creation to nothing. Now, I think he's exaggerating to make his point. But I do think that slot machines and theme parks are not necessarily out of the question, but they are definitely on the bleeding edge of disrespect to the source material. And if Christopher Tolkien doesn't have any rights over how they're used, and if all the imagery is from the movies anyway, I can see why he's upset.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a weird kind of situation because, you know, the film franchise has definitely brought them into the public consciousness in a way that would never have happened otherwise in you know, modern society today at this point. I mean, it really has brought on a renaissance of these characters and the story. And that's been amazing because, you know, people are getting into it and they're going back to the original source material. But on the same token, it is kind of...
Tolkien.
Oh... On the same Tolkien, it is also kind of, you know, it loses a little bit in the translation from book to film, and it loses a little bit of its original meaning, and it becomes more of a spectacle rather than the truly great storytelling device that it was.
My opinion is there are probably ways to do, there certainly are ways to do theme parks, and there are probably ways to even do freaking online slot machines that would not degrade the book. Maybe not the slot machine so much, you know, maybe stretching it there. But if this was all collaborative, and if they're saying, you know, we want to do something that's respectful of the source material, that extends the source material, that is true to J.R.R. Tolkien's vision of the work, then that would be fine. But Warner Brothers is just kind of forging off on their own, saying, oh, we got the licensing rights. And so I think it's right for HarperCollins and Christopher Tolkien to say, well, you have certain licensing rights that were actually given to United Artists a long time ago, and those shouldn't still apply. So.
And the sad fact of the matter is that Warner Brothers will probably continue doing this, you know, in perpetuity, and then maybe, you know, basically just go in the same vein, and then maybe they'll pay them some money later down the line. But that seems like how it kind of works in this kind of scenario.
Unless you can get a judge on your side.
Right. Yeah. But I don't think they're going to be forking over too much money. There's been so much drama around The Hobbit.
Yeah.
So much drama. I mean, between those animals dying on set and like all the stuff, it's just like really.
Wait, and the production company that went out of business in between Lord of Rings and The Hobbit. Yeah. There's a dark force at work.
A dark underbelly.
Yeah.
Speaking of dark underbellies, Pottermore, the online bookstore.
I was going to do a positive spin of like, look, if you J.K. Rowling knows what can happen by watching the legacy of Tolkien, so she's maintaining control.
But, no, I know. Yeah. I just wanted to say something about dark.
There's also Voldemort.
Well, there you go. He's the dark underbelly.
Right.
But J.K. Rowling's Pottermore is adding ebook gifting. And a new book.
What?
Which is cool.
Oh, Tales of Beetle the Bard.
Tales of Beetlejuice. They're adding it to the Pottermore collection of things
cool.
you can download. Yeah. It's not a new book.
It's not a new Harry Potter, but it's settled in.
The title of the article is misleading. But it's cool. I mean, I think she's doing a really good job of you know, holding on to her own IP and distributing it the way
that's
that she wants to.
Property, if people don't understand.
Oh, intellectual property.
She's not holding on to her own urine.
Ew. Right. I almost called you. I'm so used to being shocked at things my husband Ryan says that I just went, ew, Ryan.
Yeah,
it's no, like my default.
Someone said something shocking. I've been of two minds on the whole Pottermore thing because in some ways it feels like over controlling, but she's the author. And I think she's being really smart. And if she's making any mistakes, it is purely through not being as subsumed in every aspect of technology that we are doing what we do. And that's totally forgivable. She's doing DRM-free stuff. Mm-hmm. She's selling ebooks that are cross-compatible. You know, this is smart, and she's doing it right, and she's being very reader-friendly for the most part.
And she's very fortunate to be able to do that because she has, you know, got the kind of pull at this point that allows her to do this kind of stuff. And every author could do it. They just may not be so successful.
Well, and not every author came up at the time where the lessons were, the writing was on the wall, right? I mean, mm-hmm. she was very, very, very protective of Harry Potter in the early days in a way that allowed her, once the internet started to become a force, to realize, you know, I really need to keep all of these rights all the time. She didn't fall for what writers may have fallen for back in the 70s when United Artists came along saying, yeah, we want to make a movie and give us the merchandising rights, you know, so we can have some stuffed animals. That's all.
Yeah.
I promise we won't make theme parks and online video machines. Slot machines, whatever.
If there is not a Harry Potter slot machine somewhere in the world, I would be very surprised.
Yeah. Terry Pratchett is also looking out for the legacy of Discworld. According to an interview with the New Statesman, he has confirmed that his daughter Rihanna has received his blessing to work on additional Discworld projects after he passes away or if he's no longer capable of writing. And of course, he is suffering from early onset Alzheimer's. So he's you know, it's very sad, but also very awesome that he is saying, you know what? Yes, I've got this horrible thing looming in front of me, but I'm going to look out for Discworld. I'm going to make sure it's safe, and I'm going to entrust it to my daughter. I think that's fantastic.
I also thought it was very, very cool that his daughter is a very well-known games writer. She worked on the Overlord series and Mirror's Edge, and she's been a writer for several gaming magazines. So it's a cool... I'm not going to say that she's going to come at it from a different kind of perspective, but I think it's cool that she's already kind of working in the geek space, the geek sphere. She gets it. And I think that I'm looking forward to seeing her work in the Discworld series.
Pratchett also said that he wasn't sure when the transfer would happen because when he has to stop writing, he'll be incredibly angry. That's a quote. And he also said that he had a cardiac incident, an emergency while in New York on a signing tour last month. This is I'm reading this off the Word Zone. Adam Whitehead had it up there. And the quote from him regarding that was, I once heard it mentioned that signing tours can kill you quicker than drugs, booze, and fast women, some of which I haven't tried.
Oh, he's great.
I love Terry Pratchett.
Me too. So it's the end of the year, which means, of course, that all of the Reader's Choice and all of the best of lists are coming out or getting ready to come out. And Goodreads, where we host our forums, of course, is doing their 2012 Goodreads Choice Awards. There's some great stuff in both the paranormal fantasy, science fiction, and fiction categories that you guys may enjoy or may want to vote for. I am not going to tell you guys who I voted for because it's very contentious.
It's hard. I'm just looking at the science fiction category here. And
I bet I know who you voted for.
You've got Year Zero by Rob Reed. Mm-hmm. You've got Red Shirts by Scalzi. You've got Caliban's War by James S.A. Corey. Long Earth by Baxter and Pratchett. Orson Scott Card Shadows in Flight. And that's only half of them. There's four others in here, too. So I haven't voted yet. So who did you think that I had voted for?
I'm guessing that you voted for Caliban's War.
I haven't voted yet.
Well, who do you think I voted for?
In the sci-fi category?
Yeah. Just because I'm the sword doesn't mean I'm not allowed to vote.
No, no, I know. I know. What? You can't vote.
You're not allowed to do that.
Did you vote for year zero?
I don't know. Maybe I did.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're not telling. I'm not trying to trick you. I just... yeah, and fantasy is not an easier choice either. You've got G. Willow Wilson's A Leaf the Unseen. You've got N.K. Jemisin's The Killing Moon.
Why is paranormal
Robin Hobb,
fantasy,
City of Dragons.
Why is paranormal fantasy all very... except with the exception of, like, The Rook, why does it all kind of look like vaginal fantasy?
Well, that's
instead of just
paranormal fantasy and fantasy are two different categories.
Where I don't see fantasy. Oh, there's
fantasy.
Fantasy's
right above it. That's where
I voted.
So
in that
paranormal fantasy is basically, they might as well call it vaginal fantasy, I think. It's okay. Not quite, yeah, like you say, The Rook is in there, but
I don't even know what that's about, so I can't speak to.
Remember we got the video review of it on the video show.
Oh gosh, it's hard to keep everything.
It's kind of like a thriller.
I want to read. I haven't read Trudy Canavan yet, and I really want to read this series that she's had. Also, there's a lot of these hooded beings in the fantasy section. That's going in. King of Thorns is up there, which I've heard good things about. Of course, G. Willow Wilson, as you mentioned, for A Lift the Unseen.
Wind Through the Keyhole is in fantasy. That's interesting. Stephen King's book.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, right? There's horror section.
I mean, it's not horror,
Ooh,
even though it's
Mira Grant is in the horror section, and Scott Sigler.
Oh, look at that. Go, you guys. Yay.
That's awesome.
Well, I should be careful. I was going to say, now I know who I'm going to vote for, but I have to choose between them.
I know.
I can only vote for one.
Now I don't know who I'm going to vote for.
I want to vote for both of them.
That's not fair. They should let us. But anyway, you can put in all your votes at goodreads.com/choiceawards and help your author win the award this year. Your favorite author.
J.K. Rowling got a fiction nomination here, too. That's interesting. For a Casual Vacancy. Also, Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, I heard, is a really cool mainstream novel, and it's got kind of a fantasy sci-fi element.
Would you rather she be in the nonfiction category?
No. I'm just saying that this is her first venture outside of Harry Potter, and it's apparently well-received, so good for her.
Nice.
Penguin is expanding library ebook lending with Baker and Taylor. This is after Penguin stopped making its ebooks and digital audiobooks available to libraries. They are now starting up again. So if you are a librarian or you are a library patron, that's good news for you.
Yes. I was kind of surprised. I forgot about all that stuff with Penguin. Coming out of the library ebook lending situation, but it's good that they're coming back. It's just unfortunate that none of it works with Kindle.
Yeah, I know. It's certainly not perfect. There's lots of restrictions. Read the article that we'll put up at swordandlaser.com if you want to get the full story.
Tom, I did read the article.
Read the article, Veronica.
I read it.
Gosh. Why were you?
Now, this article cracks me up. It's over on Engadget. It's about the Bibliomat, which is a homemade vending machine for old books. Now, there's a Toronto bookstore called The Monkey's Paw, and they had a ton of, like unwanted paperbacks and stuff they could not get rid of. So they built this machine, which, frankly, I think is just a person inside of a box. I've come to the conclusion that there is a person.
You don't believe that they actually made it. They say it's levers, pulleys, a telephone bell.
No, I'm pretty sure it's an intern in a box.
Actual books. You think it's an intern.
You pay $2 and it spits out a random paperback.
It wouldn't be that hard to make a vending machine that would drop books. Come on.
It would be much less expensive to stick a person in a box. I'm just saying.
That would be more dangerous.
Well, I mean, it's pretty big. It's not small. I mean, it's at least five shelves high.
Going in and out eventually. Come on.
They would what?
You would see them going in and out. You'd hear them.
Not if you had a secret trap door in the back that led to a secret door in the bookshelves.
I swear.
Why would they make it so not see-through then? Usually if you're in a vending machine, you can kind of see the things that you maybe get.
That's what it says, because they don't want you to see what you're going to get.
But that's stupid. It's a person in the box.
It's not a person in a box.
I will bet you $25 that it is actually a person in the box.
All right. I will take that bet.
How are we going to solve this? We have to send one of our listeners to Toronto and then believe
them. Any of our listeners in Toronto, go to the Monkey's Paw, push the thing over. If you hear a scream, let us know.
Okay.
No, don't do that.
That sounds reasonable. Don't actually do that. And then if you do it, don't tell them we sent you.
Yeah, we disclaim any responsibility. We are discouraging you from doing exactly that.
Do it. I want to know.
Don't do it.
All right, well, let's move on to the calendar. We've got a lot of stuff coming out on November 27th. What are we reading down to? How far do we have to go? December 11th? Okay.
Yeah, just to the next podcast
episode. Okay, all right. So on November 27th, we have, that is today.
Yeah, we're doing Tuesday episodes now, so we're doing release day.
Ooh, if I get around to publishing the episode today, we'll see. on the 27th, we have The Fractal Prince by Hannu Rajiemi. We have Cold Days, a novel of the Dresden Files by Jim Butcher. Woo! We have Trapped, The Iron Druid Chronicles, Book 5 by Kevin Hearn. Bard's Oath, Dragon Lords by Joanne Burton. Steel's Edge by Yona Andrews. King of the Dead, The Jeremiah Hunt Chronicle by Joseph Nazis. Heaven to Wudang, Journey to Wudang, Book 3 by Kylie Chan. And The Rise of Ransom City, Half-Made World by Felix Gilman. Sorry.
I feel like this is the last minute. Like, we need these books to hit the shelves in time for the holidays. Quickly. Get them out there. November 30th, that's the end of this week, Sword and Laser Book Club video wrap-up of The Dirty Streets of Heaven by Tad Williams. Look for it at youtube.com/geekandsundry. Also, on December 4th, 2012, A Red Sun Also Rises by Mark Hodder. Super Volcano All Fall Down by Harry Turtledove, the master of alternate history. Alien versus Alien by Jeannie Koch. Elemental Magic, All New Tales of the Elemental Masters by Mercedes Lackey. And Andromeda's Fall, Legion of the Damned by William C. Dietz.
Nice. And then on December 5th, we have Moscow But Dreaming by Ekaterina Sedia.
Ekaterina.
Did I get it that time?
You're fine.
Okay. And then on December 7th, we have the Sword and Laser Book Club video episode kickoff of The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien. And on the 11th, we have another episode of the Sword and Laser podcast.
That's the next time we'll be doing it.
And also Peace by Gene Wolfe is coming out.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah. You know, we're going to have to figure out something because the next episode after the 11th is the 25th. We might have to record ahead of time for that one. Unless you want to spend Christmas recording Sword and Laser podcast.
Sure, don't want to do that.
So we'll you may get the episode on December 25th a little earlier. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we'll just auto-publish on the 25th. Who knows? Maybe Santa will deliver it to you.
Ooh. Well, anyway, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. Now, of course, as we mentioned, Cold Days by Jim Butcher is coming out. You can also get the audiobook over at audible.com. It's narrated by James Marsters, who I am to understand
is Spike
from Buffy.
He was also Brainiac in Smallville.
Ah, okay. Two shows I have not watched. I'm sorry. Please do not come to my house with torches and pitchforks
and spikes.
I'm also to understand that Felicia Day was also in a show called Buffy.
Really?
As a character as well. No. These are all things I would not have known because I never watched the show.
Don't know her.
Oh, you guys are going to hate me now. Yeah, never heard of her. So you want to get that, you head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword. You'll get a free audiobook download of your choice. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword. And hey, if you like one free book, Tom, tell him.
Wait a minute. You're telling me if I go to audiblepodcast.com/sword, I can get Cold Days by Jim Butcher or any other book of my choice for free, and you'll still give me another free book?
I will give you another free book, Tom.
That is insane.
Yes, if you go...
How does that work?
If you go to audible.com/Sanderson, S-A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, you can get Brandon Sanderson's novella Legion for free.
Wait, so just... I only have to remember two URLs, audiblepodcast.com/sword and audible.com/Sanderson, and I have two free books.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Two free books.
It's almost like I'm reading it right off the screen in front of me. It's so easy to do.
Oh, we slay us.
Yeah, same Buffy reference. Nice.
Oh, that was totally accidental. Let's move on to Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. We have an article about the Galu. The Galu, if you remember, was the horrible demon creature that was chasing our dear friend Bobby Dollar.
You know, I feel like we didn't talk about that enough in the wrap-up that will be coming out at the end of this week. Because I thought the Galu was a pretty badass demon.
Yeah, so let's without getting into any spoilers, of course, I don't think it's spoilery to say that there is a demon creature that chases Bobby Dollar.
And it is near the end of the month, so yeah. TikTok.
We're just saying. But Red Rose Vertigo Vertigo,
Vertigo?
Vertigo. Like, yeah. Says, so does anyone else think that Tad Williams was channeling the Balrog from Tolkien's The Fellowship of the Ring?
Balrog.
Balrog. Gollum. Gollum. Gollum.
Let's do Riddles in the Dark.
So does anyone else think that Tad Williams was channeling the Balrog when he thought of the Galu?
Gollum.
Gollum. Gollum.
Or Gollum. Oh, it's Gollum. A cross. Yeah, I do. Because you got a dark demon that is very light absorbent, who is also on fire.
I pictured the Galu being very much smaller.
You know what I actually pictured when I was listening to the audiobook? Mm-hmm. The Xenomorph on fire.
What? Really? Yeah. Oh, no. Like no, I pictured really him much larger.
A really black alien Xenomorph thing.
I kind of pictured him.
That is on fire.
I kind of pictured him as looking like the demon from, what was that? Fantasia.
But with horns.
With horns.
From Fantasia?
Yeah, really? The demon in the hell scene from Fantasia.
I'm remembering now.
Hold on. I'm Googling Fantasia demon. Kinda. Yeah, totes. Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Did you just say totes?
Yes. kind of pictured it that way, but a little smaller, a little more like
Minotaur-ish, I have on the Xenomorph, on like the Fantasia demon. Yeah. Yeah. But that's it's smaller though, and the Balrog actually isn't too far off of that,
I guess. And then Dara off
of the Balrog. I'm just saying.
Dara on that thread said, "I pictured it as a scaled down Balrog the whole time."
Disney.
What?
That's nothing. I'm still talking.
And then Andrew said, "I'm not totally sure he did invent it. In Sumerian, Akkadian, Babylonian, Assyrian mythology, the Galus, also called Galu demons or Galus, were great demons, devils in the underworld. Galu demons hauled unfortunate victims off to the underworld. They were one of seven devils, or the offspring of hell, of Babylonian theology that could be appeased by the sacrifice of a lamb at their altars."
Nicely done, Andrew. So it's it's being inspired by the same source material. Tolkien almost assuredly knew of the Sumerian and Akkadian mythology.
Well, that's what Emmy says on the thread, yeah, too. Yeah.
And so I could see Tad Williams saying, "I want a Balrog sort of thing," and then realizing like, "Oh, well, the Balrog derived from this, so you know, I'll do that," or maybe not. Maybe just going straight to his knowledge, his vast knowledge of Akkadian mythology, or just researching it. So it's definitely for Bobby Dollar pulled from Sumerian Akkadian. However, Tad Williams arrived there.
Tad Williams is pulling a lot of stuff from Christian mythology, basically. Also,
totally, he's pulling from mythology a lot. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But I thought it was cool. It was a good little imagery inducer. So that was kind of neat. Also, it is the end of the month, which means that NaNoWriMo is wrapping up, finally.
Yes.
And there was a huge, long thread on Goodreads in our forums about NaNoWriMo 2012 and who has taken part. And I have a feeling maybe that's why things have slowed down in the forums a little bit this month.
Do you think enough people... Well, I mean, part of it's the holidays, probably. But also, yeah, do you think enough people are actually participating that they're like... I basically took it out of my video game time. That's what I've realized. It's like, oh, I haven't been playing these video games like Warcraft that I play all the time because I've been sitting down to write my story.
Yeah, I never finished. What was that game I was playing? I can't even remember now.
Secret World?
No, I haven't played Secret World. I just got Guild Wars 2. Uh-huh. And I just started playing that, and I'm still really low level because I haven't had any time. Dishonored. I was playing Dishonored. I haven't done that yet. I was going to get XCOM. I haven't downloaded that yet even and played it yet. I've got like a million games. Oh, Assassin's Creed 3 has been sitting wrapped up near my Xbox for the past 3 weeks or 2 weeks. Halo 4 is in the house. Haven't opened that yet. Ryan's been playing Blops 2, but I haven't even started the campaign for that, so I may never get around to it. So yeah, I have a backlog of video games that all this creative writing has gotten in the way of.
Really? What a pain. I have five people in my writing buddies who are done.
Oh yeah.
Already.
Me too. Easily.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I am at 46,910 words as of this moment.
So you're ahead.
I've not written today.
You don't even need to.
No, I don't need to, but I will, because I would like to finish early. What I'm trying to do is actually like not hit exactly 50,000 words, but like be able to wrap up my story shortly after passing 50,000 words.
I don't. Yeah, I'm coming.
And
up
I'm closing
on my
in,
story.
Man.
I'm at 44,573. I wrote a little bit today. I may write more later.
I noticed because you inched a little closer to me. I'm like, you must have written today.
So I will at this rate I will finish on November 30th, which is where I want to be. But yeah, four more days left as of this writing, so it's pretty crazy. We're almost there.
Yeah, I like my story. I think I'm gonna need to go back and revise the ending a lot because I have been getting tired. I had a good juice out of the gate, but I feel like I've been rushing a little bit, and so I'm gonna have to go back and fix things. But I've got to get the monk back from his abduction. I got to get Corgi working on the machine again, and then the superiors are going to get mad and shut it all down, and then that's the end of the book.
I don't know what... I hate my story. I hate it.
Really?
I don't like it.
You know, that's okay. It's okay to hate your story, I think, because that's what this is about, is practice. And I have so many aborted attempts of early NaNoWriMos from the early 2000s. I went 3 or 4 years straight where I would start a book and just like, abandon, just bail. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you're actually getting close to the end, that you've persisted this much for 2 years now, I think that's awesome. It will pay dividends if you keep doing it every year.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm, you know, maybe I can make it into a short story, but in its current form, I'm not too stoked on it. But whatever, that's beside the point.
For several years, I started the story Exploso the Clown. Never went anywhere.
Horrible. I kind of want to read that now, actually.
No, exactly. The title is all I got. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's a great title. Okay, well, now what? I don't have anything.
It's an okay title.
So I'm going to public domain that. Take the title. Anyone wants to write the story of Exploso the Clown, have at it.
Speaking of good writers, Philip K. Dick, The Man in the High Castle, is apparently slated for film and TV adaptations.
Oh, so we're talking about TV shows and movies now? Yes.
Yeah, I moved on. I moved on after Exploso.
We don't have like a little opening thing for that, do we?
No,
okay.
No, we just go into it.
Yeah.
If someone wants to make an opening for that, go for it.
Philip K. Dick's works are a goldmine of adaptations. And The Verge had a story about Anonymous Content LLC securing a first look deal with Electric Sheep Productions, the company founded by the late author's daughters, to work on an adaptation of Ubik with Michael Gondry. He's the guy that did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless mm-hmm. Mind. They're also developing film and TV products for Man in the High Castle, my favorite Philip K. Dick book, along with Now Wait for Last Year, King of the Elves, and Electric Ant.
I thought it was Michel Gondry.
Is it Michelle?
I think it's Michelle.
I apologize then. I think you're right.
I want to Google it.
Ah, you're right. I'm almost certain that I boofed it. I think you're right.
Okay. I'll take it. And then everyone's gonna write and say, no, Tom, you were right.
No, it's Michelle. I'm
never believe Veronica. And then
now
of course
I blame Snow Day.
Anyway,
I'm really excited. I've been wanting somebody to make a good version of Man in the High Castle. I hope it's a good version if they do make it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really excited about this because, as you know, I'm so glad that that we haven't read a Philip K. Dick book that you couldn't finish, because then instead of lemming a novel, it would be a very unfortunate term.
Dicking it?
I wasn't going to say it, but yeah.
I just had to think about that for a second. I was like, Philipping it? No.
Philipping it would not be so bad, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
K-dicking it? You can say K-dicking it.
K-dicking. That's got to be something.
That's just something.
That, like getting all paranoid that orbiting spaceships are controlling.
Yeah. Also in major TV news, of course, we have a date for season 3 of Game of Thrones. March 31st, 2013.
They just did that so they could have all the threes and ones.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is fine by me because threes and ones are my favorite combination of numbers.
Are they really?
Yeah. Zeros and threes and ones.
Did you just make that up?
No. No, I did not.
That's a thing, huh?
No, it's a big thing for me, so.
Okay.
0-3-3-1-1-3. Yep. I will remember that because I'm crazy.
March 31st.
Yep, March 31st.
So if we all live through December 21st, 2012, we'll be watching that.
I know. We've got only 2 weeks left to live, roughly.
Yeah.
Oh, too bad. What are you going to do for your last 2 weeks?
It was a good run. I don't know. Look for a place to live in the non-existent world that will exist after that.
Yes. Makes sense. So I guess we don't really have a book check-in because we're kind of in-betweeners right now. We our wrap-up for Dirty Streets of Heaven will be on the YouTube channel on Friday. And we're kicking off The Hobbit on December 7th. So, yeah, you got a little free time. Do some reading of your own. Wrap up that NaNoWriMo.
Is this the neutral zone?
We're like in the floating neutral zone.
Shall we settle the January pick then?
Oh.
Because as I posted on the Goodreads forum, I was bestowed the right by Empress Veronica to dictate the book pick for January. Mm-hmm. And so I solicited feedback from the rabble. I'm sorry, the audience, for whether we should go with Burning Chrome, which is a book of short stories, which we haven't done a lot of book of short stories, so maybe that's kind of cool, William mm-hmm. Gibson. But we've done William Gibson before. We don't like to repeat authors. Or should we do Old Man's War, which has been constantly suggested, not just by Nick now, but like over and over and over again. And we've never done Scalzi as a main pick. We've done Fuzzy Nation as an alternate pick. Mm-hmm. Or I could just pick a Philip K. Dick or a Stanislav Lem book.
So right now in the top three, we have two Scalzis. We have Old Man's War and Red Shirts in the top.
You're looking at the Listopia thing.
I'm looking at our. So we people have been voting, and where I'm looking at the Listopia right now.
Okay.
And so yeah, Old Man's War is first. I mean,
it's been solidly first for months.
It is at least almost 2,000 points ahead in terms
now,
of...
Now, what I find
odd... I don't
know
what that score means.
...is that Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep is number two. Mm-hmm. But in the thread, everyone says they want to read The Man in the High Castle.
Hmm.
I think they're just kissing up to me because they know that's my favorite. So I don't know. I don't know, Empress. What do you have words of wisdom?
I'm inclined to give the people what they want because they have been asking for this for a really long time.
Is it time to finally grant their wishes?
You know, I think if we do this, we have to have Nick come on the show.
I think that's the condition under which we will pick our January book. Mm-hmm. If Nick will agree to Skype in for the audio.
Just for a little bit. I just want to know why. We've built this up a lot about Nick being obsessed with Old Man's War, and he said
he's
a few times,
sick.
Hey guys, I'm really not that obsessed with Old Man's War. But we've told John Scalzi that Nick is obsessed with Old Man's War and has started this big campaign.
Yeah.
John Scalzi knows who Nick is. And so it's I just want to hear from Nick why he thinks that this would be a good pick.
That might be a cool thing to do regularly on the audio show, actually.
Yeah, bring people on, have them claim, what is it called? Not stake their claim, plead their case.
Well, and obviously the discussion leader mm-hmm. for the January book pick would then be Nick. I mean, who else could
that's lead? Less work for us.
All right. I wasn't going to say that. But
all right, yeah. So let's say Old Man's War is going to be the January pick.
All right, I'm
Let's
in.
Yes. I think Nick will come on. I think we can convince him.
All right. If Nick refuses, though, it's gonna be Stanislav Lem.
No,
I'm just kidding. No, it's gonna be Old Man's War. We just really hope Nick will agree.
Yes, we do. All right, so that's decided then. You guys kind of voted for this one. So stop yelling at me.
Stop yelling.
I know we've done a lot of dictatorial picks because of book movie releases and book tie-ins, which I think is fun because I think it adds an extra element. But you're right. There is a large democratic voice to this community.
Well, and just to explain for those who are wondering, what happened, we kind of got out of order in the alternating rhythm of things because of Cloud Atlas. We went from Robin Hobb to Cloud Atlas, and Cloud Atlas just doesn't really fall in any of the categories very neatly. So then it was like, well, if we do Cloud Atlas, we shouldn't go to sci-fi right away because Cloud Atlas got some sci-fi to it. But so we just basically counted Cloud Atlas as neither, and then we flipped and went to urban fantasy with Dirty Streets of Heaven, and then we went to fantasy with The Hobbit. And now we're going back to sci-fi, dictatorial. February, we could do a fan vote in February for a fantasy book, maybe. Yeah. It's up to you.
Yeah. Fun. Okay, good. Well, I'm excited to read that one. I've been looking forward to it. Let's do a quick voicemail. We have a voicemail from, I think he says Will in the voicemail, but I'm not 100% sure. So take a listen.
Hi, Tom and Veronica. My name is Will. I'm a pizza delivery guy, which is why I'm leaving you a voicemail, because I'm going to listen to you guys when I'm driving around and doing my job, which is super awesome. Anyway, I just wanted to call and say I just listened to the newest episode about Pathfinder, and I'd say it really blew my mind this morning when I got up to go listen to it, and I saw that because I recently just started playing Pathfinder myself because, a few of my buddies after watching, I've been watching Geek and Sundry since it aired, and I was like talking to my buddies, and I was like, dude, we should play D&D. So we went to the game store, blah, 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 I told us about Pathfinder, so we started playing it. Anywho, blew my mind to see the author and the co-creator on the show. It was super awesome. Well, hearing them, not seeing them, but you get the point. Super awesome. Love listening to the show, you guys. Keep up the awesome. I can't wait to read The Hobbit. I've taken a few months off the book club so I could read Song of Ice and Fire stuff, and I think I'm probably going to put that on hold because I'm only about a quarter of the way in Storm of Swords. It's so good. Anywho, yeah, I just wanted to say, really awesome, and I love what you guys do. So all your stuff. Keep it going because I love both of you guys, respectively, all your work. So, just wanted to give some sword laser love out there. All right, you guys have an awesome day, and can't wait for the next episode. Bye!
I want some pizza. I want you to bring me some pizza, Will. That would be exciting. But thank you so much for the very nice voicemail.
I'm moving soon, Will. So just hold the pizza. But then yes.
But you just want him to help you move
actually
with his pizza delivery car?
I will buy you pizza if you let me use your pizza delivery car.
Well, that's very nice. But if you want to call and leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-779-6736. That's 415-7-SWORD-6. And I think that is a show.
That is an excellent example of a show.
That is a show. If you want to leave us an email instead of a voicemail, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. We have not been getting a lot of podcast-specific emails recently. They're mostly tuned to the video show. So if you have something to say about the audio podcast, let us know. feedback@swordandlaser.com. And, of course, all of our discussions happen over on Goodreads. We will see you guys there.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.